Welcome to Equipped, a podcast by Connection Church. Equipped is a conversation about multiplying gospel community and fueling spiritual growth. We have one clear goal, to equip leaders to multiply. We want to help people follow Jesus, make disciples, lead small groups, and plant churches. My name is Jordan Thigpen. I'll be leading you through today's conversation. Let's get equipped. Hey everybody, Jordan Thigpen here. I wanted to give a little bit of a preface for this episode. We're going to be filming an episode with Colby Garman. Colby is a close friend of mine. He was also the pastor that oversaw my first ever ministry internship. He is a friend that I have consulted over the years over and over and over for everything from marriage to kids to pastoring to all sorts of stuff. I can't recommend him as a pastor and a friend more highly. I love him to death. I think he's the best. A lot of what we do as far as my area with the equipping area is really, as far as the themes of multiplication, a lot of the language I use with that comes from Colby. I'll be completely honest. I feel like I missed the mark on this episode just a little bit. I still think there's enough good stuff in here that I want to keep it in and still put it out for anybody that cares to listen to the conversation. But I want to do it again. I want to, even since the conversation, even me and Kate have had further conversation about how can we be more clear and bring more clarity to what we want when we talk about multiplication. What do we hope for? What do we desire for our church when we talk about multiplication? I think there's another level of clarity that we need to get to. When I say we, I mean me, and trying to talk about multiplication and trying to talk about these things. But I would leave you with this. Now, we want to get to this in the days ahead. What does it mean to follow Jesus and he make you a fisher of men? That's the verse in Matthew 4:19. Jesus looks at the disciples and says, "Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." That's been something I've been chasing my entire Christian life, of what does it mean to follow Jesus and for him to create in me an ability to fish for men. I think that's something me and Colby both share. And I think in today's podcast, just keep that in mind. We're trying to get at what are the things that enable us to fish for people? What enables us to pursue multiplication? Because the truth of the matter is that churches all over the place are dying. There are lots of churches that are not having fruitful ministry. And I think a lot of times whether it's the pastor that's in place, the deacons that are in place, the elders that are in place, the people that make up the membership of the church, the people that attend the church, have either stopped following Jesus and or are not fishing for men. They no longer care for the souls of people. They no longer desire to see God saved. They no longer to personally be discipled, to grow up in their faith. And so there's so much more that we have to say, but I wanted to give that little bit of a caveat before we got into today's episode. I wanted to apologize. I think there's another level of clarity that we need to get to. I think everything that Colby said is absolutely golden. I can't recommend listening to what he has to say more highly. You can find their sermons at Pillar Church of Dumfries. I don't know the URL right off the top of my head, but if you Google Pillar Church of Dumfries, you'll be able to get to their sermons. He's an incredible preacher. And so just wanted to give that both caveat and a recommendation. And I hope you guys enjoy today's episode. Colby, so I wanted to get you on today to talk a little bit about multiplication. Thanks for making time to do this. I wanted to take maybe just a second, introduce you and introduce what you've been doing in Washington, D.C. for a really long time. But then also we'll get into a conversation about, I think when we were texting back and forth about it, of the why, the what, and the how of multiplication. on the Equipped podcast. We've done an episode on why multiplication and what is multiplication. And so this is sort of updating that material and bringing it into what we call an Equipped conversation with somebody that is a more than established practitioner of this particular trade. I think it's, for the sake of my audience, everything I know about church planting and discipleship at the church planting level has come from, for sure, Brandon, who I work for, but also Colby and Clint in Washington, D.C. It was the first internship I ever had. It was my first introduction to ministry. I wanted you to take a second, just introduce yourself to any of our folks. A lot of this audience is primarily my Connect group leaders, my small group leaders. Just would love for you to introduce yourself to them, and then we'll get into the conversation.
Well, my name is Colby Garman. I currently do two main ministry roles. I've pastored at Pillar Church since 2010, which is how I met Jordan. I do think he was the first ever pastoral intern I had at Pillar. Mm-hmm. And so we've had lots of interns since, but none like Jordan. So, it's when I met Jordan, he was wearing camo Crocs before camo Crocs were cool. And so that was one of my big first memories. But, I've been at Pillar Church since 2010. I also serve as the catalyst for Send Network for Northern Virginia. And so I get to work with church planters and I just do both of those, wear both those hats and try to work them together. The reason that works is because Pillar Church has been committed to multiplying mm-hmm. churches here in Northern Virginia and beyond. And so a lot of that work overlaps and I get to be a resource really to other churches and pastors that are trying to figure out how to plant churches. And so I'm really excited to do that. I'm married to my wife, Annie, for 22 years. And we have four daughters, two of which are young adults, college students. And then I've got a 13 and 11-year-old. And so life is kind of in that big transition change as some kids are leaving the house. And love that phase of being a dad. And then I love to fly fish. So if there's anybody out there who loves to fly fish, it's always good to find you.
I think I got some boys down here that could hook you up with some largemouth bass fishing, but I know it's not quite the same. I
love largemouth bass fishing is if I'm with people who know what they're doing.
Well, let's kind of start there. I want to start just at the family level. How has being in And even kind of explain this, like convictionally and decidedly being in the church planting world, how has that affected parenting for you? How has that affected your kids and how has that developed a love of Jesus in their life?
Yeah, I mean, I think a long time ago I was talking with a guy named Jeff Christofferson who lives in Canada, but at the time he was vice president for Send Network. And he was talking about how his observation was that, a lot of people talk about pastors' kids having trouble, there's sort of these typical things about the challenges of being a pastor's kid. But he said, my observation is like missionaries and church planters, like their kids have another experience. Like a lot of them love the church. They love what their parents do. They've seen stories of like genuine faith and risk where God has showed up. And that's such a big deal that they also more often than not come to love Jesus and walk with the Lord and passionate about the mission that their parents have been passionate about. And that has proven true for sure in our lives. It's allowed us to have the opportunity to just be a part of a church that we got to design to be for our family to fit into as well. And a lot of ways, our kids have thrived because of the freedom you have in a church planting environment. They see walking with Christ as exciting, as costly, but they also like bring those two things together. It's both costly and exciting, and that's part of what makes it really something that they want to be a part of. And it feels right. It just feels like, oh, this is what the Christian life is like, advancing the gospel, praying, seeing God do things. And we've done it all together. You know, we've really tried to do that together as a family. And the result is I've got kids who just really love the church, not just our church, but love church planting, love the mission of the gospel. And that's really exciting to see.
I just finished a book called Raising Passionate Followers of Jesus by Phil and Diane Comer. And I mean, the whole premise of the book basically is for you as a parent, you have to model being a passionate follower of Jesus. If that's what you want your kids to do, then you have to do that, right? And it makes me think of like with church planting, it's like the analogy, I feel like the image, like I feel like the Lord just dropped into my mind is like, it's like taking your kid, like going to a, you know, a large church that meets all your needs is like taking your kid to the grocery store and expecting them to develop a love for hunting, right? Like they're not going to have the same connection to the animal. They're not going to have the same connection to the process and to how it actually comes about. Like the thing that you want, you know, it's most readily produced. I'm not saying that you can't go to a large church and develop a great love for Jesus, right? Like you can go to a small church and develop a no love for Jesus because the Spirit's just not there. But there is something that I do think more Christians need to consider of the spiritual return on investment of being a part of a church plant, which is just an organizational word for a group effort to multiply the gospel. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but that's what I like. You know, every church planter I talk to, one of the biggest things that they love so dearly about church planting is the effect that it has on their kids.
Yeah. And I think part of that is what you said at the beginning. I mean, you don't stay involved in church planting and multiplication work without a passion for the gospel. Now, sometimes people plant a church and then they just stay there and, you know, they're happy just for that church to plateau and you know, be stable. But most people who love church planting are in it because they want to see that happen over and over and over again. And the kind of, when we talk about multiplication, we're talking about being a church that is devoted to the mission, that is multiplying, which
right.
We're taking the risks, we're doing it, we're exercising that faith. And because of that, you know, I think like what we really know deep down is that kind of lifestyle that we want people to walk in is caught more than it's taught. And so our kids are most likely to catch it if we're sincere.
That's right. So let's zoom back out just for a little bit. And one thing, let me explain, I guess, for our listening audience, just to make sure we cover. So Colby said he sits in sort of two seats. He's the lead pastor of Pillar Church of Dumfries, but also is the church planting catalyst for Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia. And what that means for, you know, for our audience, it's similar to the seat, basically the seat that Billy Shiver sits in for our network of churches. So Pillar Church of Dumfries and what Colby says, the SIN Network, it's a part of the North American Mission Board, which is a part of the Southern Baptist Convention. And all that is a strategy to pull money together to accomplish kingdom multiplication and kingdom purposes across a shared denominational identity. We do the same thing as the Connection Network, just not tied to a denomination. We also, as Connection Statesboro, give a portion of our giving or our tithes to the Connection Network, and that helps facilitate bringing on church planting residents. And that also facilitates us sending people to unreached people groups throughout the world, which we have two of two units on the field now with a third in the pipeline. And so that's the seat, because it's such a large effort, Colby sits in for a large swath of churches to help facilitate that multiplication. So all that to say, Colby is one of the leading thinkers in North America when it comes to all things multiplication, And I say that shamelessly and without hesitation because of the fruitfulness of his ministry. Share a little bit about how the Pillar Network, the Pillar family of churches, and I think I was telling Quentin earlier, I think it was like 26 church plants in 16 years or something like that, just from your family of churches, not including all of the Sin Network, Northern Virginia, which has been, and or DC, which has been unusually successful in comparison to all other Sin cities as well. So fill in some of that data for our listeners. Hey, could you say, could you brag about yourself for just a little while for our people if you just...
Yeah, I mean,
Could you brag about yourself for just a little while for our people?
I probably won't do that. I mean, like the whole like leading thinker in North America thing like that. We're one of the leading thinkers on this. We've just been doing it for a long time. There are lots of great guys out there doing the work who have incredible insight I've been able to learn from. Much of what we've learned is just by doing the work of preparing and sending church planners. And, you know, it really depends on how you want to count it. You know, we've got, there's direct plants, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren. And that bubble, that gets large, which is why multiplication matters. You know, some of the things that we have been able to do is to start a whole group of churches called Pillar Church, similar to the way you guys are called Connection Church, in military communities around the world. There's 14 of those churches that have started since we launched that project called the Praetorian Project. It's an ongoing work to plant churches in military communities and connect them together so people can go from place to place while they're getting moved around. We'll see our 15th and, Lord willing, 16th church planted in that group over the next year or so. And so that's really exciting. I mean, that's...
Where is that going to be, Colby?
The next churches are in Killeen, Texas, near what used to be Fort Hood. It's called Fort Cavazos now. And they're going to be planted out of Pillar Church of San Antonio, which is a grandchild church of ours. So that'd be a great grandchild church, you know, fourth generation. And then Fayetteville, North Carolina, former Fort Bragg, which is now called Fort Liberty. And that'll be planted also out of a grandchild church coming out of Pillar Church of Topsail.
Topsail's already planting. Wow.
Yeah. And so, that's a big part of what we've done. We've planted other churches. We kind of rolled out a Amharic Ethiopian speaking church mission because there are 500,000 people in DC, and had a chance to help some churches get started in that community. We've planted a Spanish speaking congregation that meets with us in our building. We've done some overseas planting to include catalyzing a church plant in Reykjavik, Iceland, as well as in Bali, Indonesia. And so, you know, when you put all those together with some other just onesies and twosies of planting here and there, it's in the like 30 range of churches that we've been a part of planting kind of in our family tree. And so that's been exciting. But part of the power of multiplication is that multiplication looks more amazing than it really is produced at any one spot, because you start to teach other people to repeat, and before long the numbers grow and the impact grows significantly.
I think that's what's really important for me for our folks to understand, is that most of the work of Pillar has been accomplished at a point when the congregation size, and this is really hard to explain, but we'll get there. Like, you guys are in a Marine Corps military community, and so the turnover, you have people for less than 2 years. And so the amount of people that have come through Pillar is in the thousands, but the congregation size at any one point in the midst of sending someone out has been anywhere from, I mean, when I was the intern, we were planting Pillar Church of Stafford, and there were 50 to 120 people on a Sunday morning. And we were planting Pillar Church of, and Q-Town was already planted, I believe. And we were in the middle of planting Pillar Stafford. So all that to say, like, this wasn't just like, okay, we grew Pillar to 500 people. We had
size problems. Yeah, wasn't that. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. So, I mean, most of this work has been done when the church has been between 300 and 400 people, if not less. And so I think for us, a lot of times, I see this at the connect group level, which is what we call our small groups. People feel as if, well, I could never be in a small group. I could never be in a small group. I could never be in a small group. How could I ever have time to be in a small group? And then they're in a small group. And then relationally, they get so connected and the group grows to 15, 16, 17 people. And then they're like, well, I could never do without these people. Why, how could anyone ever leave the small group? And that's been the interesting opportunity of Pillar is, I mean, from the time they like go through your membership process, they're like, okay, I'll be here another 18 months. So what can we get accomplished in 18 months? So obviously transiency has really helped multiplication for you guys, that's the emphasis of the Praetorian Project, is planting a church at every major Marine Corps base in the world, and now expanding to other branches of the military outside of the Marines. But let's transition just a little bit. So this is a little bit of background on Colby, but I want to start. Maybe with this, we can go sort of all over the place with this, but how would you define multiplication?
Well, I mean, multiplication is a pretty simple concept. When I'm talking about multiplication, I'm talking about giving sort of birth to a new thing that can become fully mature to give birth again and expecting that to happen. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about it on a church level, I mean, multiplication means like every generation can fully reproduce itself. Mm-hmm. And so multiplication happens when more generations than not do that and repeat that. And so when we're talking about church planting, a lot of times people are interested in seeing a church planted, but they're not really committed to seeing the church multiplied. And those are two different things in my mind. Planting a church means I'm going to add to the number of churches that exist and there's going to be this church. But multiplying churches means that I'm going to be sending out churches that I'm expecting to repeat what we did. And when we're multiplying churches, what we're doing is we're preparing ready leaders to take the mission of the gospel into another community or area or across some barrier, whether that's geographic or cultural. And we're expecting that not only are they going to plant a church, but then they're going to train another person to do that. So it's just real simple, simple math that if we do that and repeat that and don't over-centralize it, what we get is a decentralized opportunity for growth as each layer of that matures. So if I plant a church this year and we say 2 years from now, after we see this church planted, both your church and my church, we're going to try to plant another church. Well, then we're at four churches. And if we say, well, maybe it'll take three more years after that, each one of those four churches, we're going to try to plant a church. You can see how with just a couple generations, you start to make a potential impact in a bunch of different places. And even if one sort of leg of that gets cut off for some reason or doesn't survive, you're already way down the road to a substantial impact in what it is that you're trying to do or accomplish. And right. So multiplication to me is empowering each church at every generation to fully embrace the multiplying mission of the gospel.
If you would, I'd love to hear, what are some competing visions of that concept in the church, and how are they detrimental overall to the kingdom?
Well, competing visions of that concept in the church are, first of all, that our primary goal in church is stability. You know, that the church exists to protect this particular singular institution in a community. I think about that in terms of the parable of the talents. Like if we just measure it and go, what does Jesus want his kingdom people to do? He doesn't want to just protect the one thing that is out there. the one talent that's been provided, buried in the ground, and make sure that that thing is there at the end of the age to present to him. What he's actually told us is his desire is, in some manner, you ought to see that thing double, triple, quadruple, whatever that is. And right. And I think that's true on every level as a disciple. I think everything Jesus tells us to do, we're to have that kind of mindset about. So if it's person-to-person ministry, we're going, I don't exist just to be a Christian who survives until eternity. My responsibility is to see, at least see my one talent of a life turned into two talents of people that are walking with Christ, or five talents of people that are now engaged in that mission at the end of my life. And if everybody takes that seriously, you start to realize, over a lifetime, that work may not seem like a terribly heavy burden if we're all in on it. So whether it's on the individual discipleship level or on the church level, the parable of the talents really helps frame for me this responsibility that we have to do that. But the barrier there is, hey, I just want to make sure this thing that is attached to my name or my face or my, life and desire, it just stays secure. Yeah. And so a lot of churches are functioning to stay secure, to sort of, and I call that maintenance mode. I mean, they just get into a particular maintenance mode that really allows them to think that it's okay to not try to take that one church and turn it into a second gospel mission somewhere else. The other competition is with the desire for pastoral leaders to make a name for themselves by having a large church. Mm. Now, there's no particular size of the church in the New Testament that is prescriptive, so I certainly wouldn't think that. But I think there's a lot of personal and sociological motivations that leaders and pastoral leaders have for having a large, visible, recognizably, powerful church in a community, both from how it makes them feel and how it makes other people view them and how they're seen within their denomination or their network or the community. And there's usually more motivation in that than there is to come aside and to train other leaders who you're going to send out. And so unless you have a kingdom motivation given by Jesus, you're probably going to turn aside to this other thing of, largeness and things that are going to draw attention to yourself, because the actual mission of Jesus requires you to be like a seed that dies to itself, right? So that other things can grow. And so that calling doesn't particularly get you notoriety, because it calls you to a work that develops slowly. Mm. And so, if multiplication work and giving away, nobody even recognizes that something as significant has happened until you get pretty far down the road and people are like, hey, where did these 15 churches come from? How did that happen? And then people might start noticing it, but it's a long on-ramp to get to that place. And so most people will stop instead and do what's more short-term and easier, is like, let's try to grow the church really fast, because that's how I can know that I'm being successful. And so I feel like that's a battle. Then I would say the other barriers have to do with our desire to stay close to one another once we've experienced community. And I think a lot of Christians struggle with this. Like, if you're going to be a church that multiplies, you're going to send away people you love, that you care about, that you believe in, that have served with you, and you're going to have to do that and feel the sense of loss that comes with that. Mm. We've experienced the sense of loss that comes with sending people out, people we love, people we've walked a long time with, led with. And I don't know if there will ever be another time in life where that group of people will be near me and we'll get to do life together. Right. And so I think that's a part of the calling and sacrifice of the gospel. So those barriers, I think, are significant ones that we've seen and that I think people have to overcome.
I think, I think that I would add sort of, I think sometimes the over shepherding impulse that a lot of pastors feel of maybe a little bit of a fatherly heart of like, I want to make sure the sheep are having as good of an experience as possible. And you want to move them into a place where they are as comfortable and as safe as possible. But that does come at the sacrifice of kingdom impact, because those sheep then are taken off of the sidelines or put on the sidelines or, you know, whatever analogy you want to use. They're taken out of the game or they're taken off the battlefield, however you want to put it. But you do want to provide as good of a spiritual environment. But what that carries is the presupposition is that making disciples and multiplying the kingdom doesn't have value, or it doesn't have its own type of reward. I guess in other words, what I mean is until you have a limited experience of Christ until you begin to participate in the Great Commission.
What I would say is, Jordan, some of this comes with our terminology, and it's hard to break cultural terminology. We haven't been perfect at it, but the use of the terminology pastor for our highest designation of the office is pretty interesting, given that that's not the terminology and nomenclature of the New Testament for the biblical office. It's not to say that we can't use the term pastor, but that noun is used of particular giftings, and the description of pastoring is a part of what elders, overseers do. But what we've done is we've said pastor, which immediately people have come to say the gifting pastor shepherd. I'm just a shepherd teacher. That's what my responsibility is to the church. But what we've done then is we've downplayed a bunch of the other aspects of our leadership. We are leading a mission society. We're leading a multiplying people. And we have a responsibility to lead as elders and overseers to steward this particular church and its resources for the kingdom and the expansion of the gospel. And so I'm not exercising leadership if I'm only shepherding, if I'm only keeping people safe, and I'm never helping people think about what risks they may need to take to see the gospel expand. And so much of what allows things to expand is an assumption of some risk and some discomfort on the part of people that are in our churches. And because we've mainly said, well, my role, I'm a pastor, and I probably need to make sure that that would mean I have a shepherding impulse. I'm going to keep them safe and informed, but I'm not going to be I'm not going to disrupt much. You know, well, there's a bunch of other giftings in the New Testament that would compel us to see the leadership of the church has this responsibility for outward expansion too.
The elder has the responsibility of the outward expansion of the kingdom. That's really, but I think because we've internalized as shepherds, what we wind up with are churches that are highly informed but undertrained. And so people have a lot of information about the Bible or what we believe or what we're about, but undertrained in how to embody kingdom multiplication principles. And so that's what a lot of what I hope today's conversation sheds some light on of I hope it sparks a little bit of a hunger. I really the person that I have a heart for in this is, and we need to take a break here in about, I think, 2 minutes, but I think that the person I have a heart for is the person that maybe has, because you're listening to the Equip podcast for a reason, right? For if you care about what our church desires and believes and cares about, and I hope that maybe there's been something in your faith that feels like it's been missing, and you can't exactly put your finger on what it is. And I believe that it is actually multiplication, not just sort of a management of your Christianity. Clint used to say this all the time, that there is no such thing as balance. Christ is Lord over all aspects of your life. Multiplication is the direction that we're all meant to be pursuing, and then all aspects of our life fall in line behind the direction, which is to multiply the values of the King that purchased us from eternal separation from a holy God. And so I hope that this begins to lay out sort of a pathway of explaining, one, why multiplication, but then two, how can we practically go about doing that? So we're going to take just a quick break to reset the Zoom, and we'll be right back picking up on this conversation with Colby. All right, so we've covered a little bit of your definition for multiplication. When I did the episode at the very beginning of the podcast, way back when we first started the podcast, I defined multiplication as the fruit of a believer's life by the Holy Spirit through time and relationship. What I laid out then is the primary image that the Bible lays out when it comes to multiplication is that of a family. So it's the Greek word plethuno that shows up over and over and over. It's Acts 12, Acts 9, Acts 2. It's all over the place. But plethuno means to make full to max capacity, which that the import of that, right, is that of a family, like you said, to empower and train and make ready one generation to take over the values and the work of the previous family, right? And so I love I loved your angle on that, you know. And so just anything that you would expand on sort of that with, whether it's the definition of plethuno or how multiplication, trying to think of it as practically as possible, the fruit of a believer's life by the Holy Spirit through time and relationships, just anything you want to pick up on that. And then I'd love to move a little bit more to maybe how does multiplication begin to take place?
Yeah. You know, I think fruit is a good example of this idea as well. I mean, if you know anything about how fruit and produce, you know, is multiplied, you know, is harvested, you realize, like, in every actual mature piece of fruit, there is the opportunity for many more generations of that same kind of fruit. And so, like, a healthy piece of fruit has written into it, you know, the expansion and future of more pieces of fruit. It can be consumed and still produce fruit, which is really right. An kind of image. And and I think, you know, for our Christian lives, I think that's really important, like, for us to understand, like, bearing fruit is something that then allows more fruit to come in a multiplied way from us over time. And it's part of what's written into the DNA of spiritual fruit that we would reproduce. And I think people get that somewhat on, like, an evangelistic or a discipleship level, but they don't think about it all that much on a church level.
Yeah, I mean, it's the reason you get teary-eyed at a baptism, right? It's the reason that, like, when somebody stands up to receive salvation on a Sunday morning, it's like, means that it was like a really moving morning, right? Because something about what you believed was multiplied across another person's life. But now how do we begin to move that in the direction of doing it on purpose and it becoming the bullseye of what we do, not just sort of a peripheral aspect of church life? And to your point, make it a church thing, not just like a Holy Spirit stray bullet kind of hitting, you know, different places.
Well, I think, I mean, there's two answers to that question in my mind, and how it works for me in the way I think about it is you do that convictionally and you do it strategically. Like, convictionally, you've got to have a theology that says that the assignment that Jesus gave to his disciples was a multiplying assignment, both in producing more disciples and multiplying disciples, but that also the institution of the church, this organized group of family that really is there, would also reproduce itself as the gospel expanded to the nations. And we see that very clearly theologically through the fact that Jesus not only describes the discipleship process in a appropriately institutional manner, it's both like organic growth with an institution that serves it. You know, you have this group of, you have people affirming through baptism that new disciples have been made. You know, they're making sure the gospel is clear. They're teaching, you know, there's a community of teaching for observing all that Jesus has commanded. And so you've got that plus the expanded assignment of mission together. And so there's a togetherness to it that has an institutional feel. We see that then not only does Jesus give that assignment in the Great Commission, we see that the disciples understood that assignment after the Great Commission took place. And after Pentecost, they understood the assignment, and we see the church gathering to learn the apostles' teaching and be clear about the gospel, to love one another. But we also see the Holy Spirit pulling them and continuing to train them into mission until far enough into the book of Acts where they are like, no, we actually are supposed to strategically think about that. Mm-hmm. So then, you just see that carry out. And so you have to have a conviction that the assignment of the Great Commission is for multiplying disciples and churches into the world so that the gospel can essentially be established in regions where it wasn't established and can make it into sort of every cultural nook and cranny that exists in the world so that people have access to know God's redeeming work. So you have to convictionally believe that and say, I want to be a part of that. That's what God is doing through the work of the Holy Spirit in the church as a result of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. I want to be a part of that called out people and be a part of that mission. Then you have to do it strategically. You have to be convinced that there's actually more strategic value in your life in multiplication than there is in addition. And what I mean by that is, as a church leader, particularly, you have to go, what would be better if I just keep adding, people to a particular church, or if I start another place in another place where they're also adding at the same time I am. So you have to become convinced of the power of multiplication as the strategy for genuine kingdom impact and gospel impact. And so the way I've talked about that, of course, is in the old illustration about the offer to either have $1 million today or a penny a day doubled for 30 days. And at the beginning, it seems like a poor decision. So strategically, having $1 million and being big seems really impactful and great at the beginning. And it's probably not all that bad. But bigness and that large lump sum that we might call just a church or a large growing singular church, that is extremely short-sighted if it's your end goal from a strategic level. Because if you start thinking about the multiplication, in the first week, it doesn't look like very much. But as the penny a day is doubling and you get into weeks 3 and 4, eventually it's so much more that it's ridiculous. And it's like 50 million or something like that when you take it all together. So that means
I think kind of even practically speaking for the sake of our listeners, right? Like, which one of those two things compels a life of faith, right? Like one of those things, $1 million today, there's a strong possibility it's going to put you in a place where you're not living and walking, for as long as you have that $1 million life of faith versus having to depend on the exponential number that's to come, right? Which I think is already the cards are kind of stacked against us as North American Christians, right? As United States Christians, because it's very easy to not live for the kingdom that is to come when we have life the way we have it. And so I think both, I love that dichotomy, the conviction, you need this multiplication has to begin to be a convictional value and also a strategic value for the how. So we've already laid out the why. So the two of us kind of press into that. How does this look strategically? Convictionally, right? I think it's really kind of reading and understanding the scriptures as the writers intended them to. I made this case in the first podcast using the word plethuno. Like, I'm not just saying that is a word that's available in the book of Acts. I'm saying that is the structure and shape of the book of Acts. Luke intentionally uses this word as summary points as the gospel jumps geographic boundary after geographic boundary, as the Holy Spirit goes from Jerusalem to Judea to Samaria to the ends of the earth. It's saying that there were many added to their number that what we can say is the book of Acts concludes that the convictional nature of multiplication is what the writer intended for us as the reader to walk away with. But now, strategically, how do we play that out?
Yeah. Before we jump into how to play it out strategically, I think, you know, one of the things I've always said then with our strategy is when we were planting churches as a small, you know, church, like we're in the first week of a penny a day doubled. You know, for the first 7 years of our church's life, I was like, this looks like nothing. Yeah. And I think you were around, you saw a lot of ways in which, you know, I think maybe people on looking were like, well, that's cute that you guys are really into this, but it didn't look like much. And as we're in the early stages of multiplication, I was always like, man, what I'm really excited for is when we get into week one or week two. And my narrative for our church was, we're like in week one or early week two of this multiplication commitment. And I was like, just wait to see what happens if we stay at it. And so now I feel like we're kind of in the middle of that story where it's like, oh, this does look a little more significant than I thought it would be. And so people look at it that way. But to me, it's like, you know, I've been at Pillar 14 years now. Like if we take that out to the whole 30 days, what happens? If we've just been like, if our impact has just been so far that we've been week one and two of that month of multiplying the penny, you know, and we're like at the midpoint right now. Well, that means that we've got amazing things that we're going to have the opportunity to see and witness coming ahead if we stay faithful to that task and help the other churches we've planted do the same, help other churches embrace that. So that's what I'm living for.
Amen. That's our goal as the Connection Network, is to plant 50 churches by the year 2050. And have for each of our church plants, all 50 of those, to be in the process and to succeed in engaging with an unreached people group, and so that's what we're looking for, the fruit of 2050, right? Like we're looking to that place. But I will say this:
what I would say to that is, one, it's a great strategic goal, and I love it. But here's an amazing thing to think about. If you focus on multiplication, that means it should be likely by 255 that you're by 2055 you're 100 churches,
right? Yep.
Just give it 5 years, everybody's committed to multiplying again at 50 churches that aren't just thinking, I'm the end of this like family tree, I'm just I'm a generation in it, and they all feel the responsibility to plant another church and teach it to multiply. So when you get to that point, you go, man, 50 sounds, you know, early on in this process for me, I was like, things like 20, 50, they sounded like a lot. Now I'm sort of like, I don't know, that y'all probably do 100 maybe by then.
Yeah. Well, but I know there are some strategic values that are tucked into that that begin to make that possible. And then I also know there are some bottlenecks that you can create accidentally that could stifle some of that. But I want to get into that by saying this. When I was an intern, what you're saying now on the podcast is, oh, well, you know, this doesn't really look like much. I thought when I was an intern, I thought it was everything. I thought it was beautiful, so much so that when I went on to seminary, I sought out the same thing. But I believed that it was everything because you and Clint and the elders of the church carried the energy and the culture, you carried the value in your communication and in your leadership, and it created a culture that this was the way it was supposed to be. And I think there's some value in that, and there's a little bit of that's what I want my small group leaders to feel, right? That's what I want our people serving in guest services to feel. That's what I want every person that becomes a member at our church, I want to carry at a leadership and cultural level a sense that there is so much more to come, and we have a process for achieving it. And the more people that buy into that process, the more exponential that it gets. And I think that's a little bit of what you mean, I believe, by we have to, if we're going to, the how of multiplication is achieved through very strategic means. And I think, and I know this because I know you, that there are processes that fuel that. So I'd love to hear what are some of the strategic values or the strategic processes that you put in place that ensure multiplication?
Yeah, I think part of that is starting at the beginning with what you were just talking about, what you experienced when you were here at Pillar, is all the way back before you can fuel multiplication, you have to have a grasp of the gospel and a church that is, in a sense, compelling enough to multiply. Mm-hmm. You know, and in a lot of situations, I think people get that out of order first, right? Like the issue is, like, I think what you experienced at Pillar and what we've experienced ongoingly, although imperfect, is like Christian love ordered around the gospel as a community. It's like a community of Christian love ordered around the gospel, and people want to be a part of that thing. Mm-hmm. And whether it was small or large, and that love, like Christian love, always, you know, compels us to reproduce. And so once you've experienced that, you know, we're not selling something, quote unquote, that we're not buying ourselves. And like, so one of the conditions of multiplication has to be that you're not just expanding for expansion's sake, but you feel like there's something valuable there and people have tasted and seen and experienced it and they want other people to have it. And so you have to get people in touch with a real experience of the gospel of Jesus to be able to talk about it in a way then that is actually compelling, so that you're not, what you experienced in Clint and myself was, we believed it because we love Jesus, we experienced his love, we were experiencing the culture of like a genuine church life who loved one another and supported one another, and we wanted that to happen in other places. And and so then, you know, creating the processes and everything was about making it possible to reproduce as much of that as we could when we sent it somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, for sure.
And then, you know, so I think you kind of want to get into a little bit, like, what are some of those processes? Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. So especially our Connect group leaders, they'll be familiar with what I call our discipleship pipeline. So this is 100% stolen language from Pillar Church of Dumfries or from the mind of Colby Garman of For us, we have a pipeline that flows from disconnected to heart and soul to a multiplier, multiplier to a missional leader. And our mission statement is we exist to connect, equip, and send. So our connecting strategy bridges the gap from disconnected to heart and soul. Our equipping strategy bridges the gap from heart and soul to multiplier, and so on and so forth, right? And so
that sounds super familiar. You can find that description in a book that Clint took and put all that language together in a little book called How to Build a Residency, but it actually explains all of that stuff.
Exactly. So, but I mean, even before Clint wrote the book, I remember me and Billy had a Zoom call with you and we talked through this, and that's where a lot of the momentum for the terminology of the pipeline. And even today, me and Quentin, a buddy of mine that we've hired on staff here, that he's going to be helping me with the equipping area and trying to explain, these aren't just like ways for us to like assess and judge people's life and character. It's a lens by which we see where they're at in their spiritual life, and we're dedicated to shepherding them further and further into their discipleship journey, because we know what's on the other end of that is multiplication. Both of the personal walking with Christ through making disciples, and also the church multiplying as a whole. Anything you just want to kind of, how did you organize? Because there's a million things a church can do, right? We can have Awana. We can have We can have, I don't know. I got saved in this church, and then I went and interned at Pillar. So I actually didn't have a lot of the, like, you know, big church program experiences. Fill in some of the gaps of where churches can, how do churches accidentally, not on purpose, not maliciously, but just sort of, where do we devote unnecessary sideways energy to things that don't multiply?
Well, I mean, the first way we do it is by not really having a plan to take people anywhere. You know, like the whole point of a development pipeline like that is that we kind of know our task. Mm-hmm. You know, there's sort of a family business going on here, which is getting the gospel to the ends of the earth. Mm-hmm. And there's layers of task in that we're to become skilled in, you know. And so we want people to become skilled in that mission and mature enough to carry it. Like those are two really challenging things, right? Like gaining ministry skill and having the maturity to carry that. Like we're talking about two things that challenge all of us at all times. But by understanding that pathway, you can help people experience the right kind of hard in their life. Like every person, you know, development happens as people experience challenge, as they challenge their limits and they, you know, learn what is necessary to rise to that next task that might just be beyond them. And so the reason you're experiencing growth there, connection, and the reason I think at times we've experienced growth is we're challenging people to journey between one of those identities that you described. And mm-hmm. so we haven't defined maturity as just sort of taking in stuff. It's like, yes, I want you to be a stable Christian who's not sinning all the time and destroying your life. Like that's a good place to get to. Carry your own spiritual weight, learn to lead yourself, learn to, you know, sort of internalize the gospel in ways that you're growing in obedience and not wanting just to walk away from Jesus. Like I want everybody to get there, but in a lot of churches, that's really all you got. Like mm-hmm. that's what they want from you.
Yeah.
What we've said is that's not maturity. That's like just getting to the end of adolescence spiritually. Mm-hmm. Maturity is you could actually help other people like understand that journey and bring them along wisely in it. And you can have an expanded ministry to a few other people. Like what if you could do that? What would it take? What do you need to learn about the gospel to teach it to another person to help them learn to walk? Now you're carrying their burdens. And sometimes people get blown over by helping another person carry their burdens when they were able to do things themselves. But that's the challenge, right? Like, can you help another person walk with Christ? Can you help another person survive? That's what it is in a family. As soon as you're married and you're responsible or you have kids. And then there's like further up the journey, like, you know, could you reproduce this whole thing in another place? Like most people can't, but we can train you to do that. And you're going to have to think more deeply. You're going to have to face more challenges. You know, all of these things are necessary. And so a lot of churches have no plan to be involved in that. That's not their goal. And so if they don't, they're not likely to get much multiplication because they're going to stifle it most of the time because what they're really saying is don't cause problems or other work for me. You know, just kind of stay in your box. But we want to create, and what you guys have done is we want to create sort of tried and true opportunities of ministry exercise in the life of the church that are going to move you along those stages. So, you know, so as you get up through there, you know, it's like, yeah, being a connect group leader or life group leader and our things, that's a challenge that we don't offer to everyone. It's offered to those who we think are ready to take that challenge, but it also yields a lot of growth in people's lives as a result. And before long, some of those people are thinking, I would like to know more about how I can engage further in ministry. And we offer training and development for that and try to help them gain expanded vision. But each opportunity is about expanding your vision and gaining training. And so churches need to be thinking about like bringing people all the way from coming into the faith to being able to be sent. And so if you measure your sending capacity as your key metric, mm-hmm. it drives development all up and down that scale, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
100%. A couple of important things just to make sure we slow down and we all hear is that each of those things are about sort of identities that we begin to take on, right? Somebody who goes from disconnected to heart and soul. It's not about how many numerically can we fill up heart and soul with. It's about those people now embody a new identity. We are followers of Christ, dedicated to following Christ together. That is the identity of a person who has heart and soul. It's about the identity of a person who can multiply. Not only can I identify in following Christ here with these people, I'm dedicated to helping more people who can't yet identify with Christ, bringing them along. So it's about an identity thing. And then all along the way, it's recasting a vision for those people and offering them the training to expand their vision. And then I think one other thing that you said in there that's really important, you hinted at this at the end, is measuring our success by our sending capacity. And I think that, again, I think in a well-meaning way, we don't want people to feel bad about their faith. We don't want people to feel like they have an uncomfortable experience, and therefore, you know, we help them in maybe wrongly encourage them to feel successful just by coming and consuming a Christian product, rather than participating in a world-changing event. But I think we need to, when we measure our sending capacity as our primary metric of success, I think we're casting the right type of vision that actually, at the end of the day, helps people get to the healthiest place spiritually and helps them get to where they actually, at the end of the day, where they actually want to be. Not just where they could be, but where they actually want to be is in that place.
Yeah, and having some awareness that these categories exist, like of where people are at, comes from Galatians chapter 6. You know, mm-hmm. Galatians chapter 6, you have this passage where Paul is saying that, you know, you got some people who are falling by the wayside, falling into sin, and they need to be restored. Mm-hmm. And listen, I mean, it's part of the grace of the gospel that the gospel can restore. People will come to you and bring you into a right relationship with Christ, help you get healthy. Like, that's a really important, we want lots of people in our churches going through the experience of being restored to the Lord and brought into that. Partly, like, for those really challenging things, we're told that the mature should do that. And they need to be watchful, because actually doing ministry has enough challenges that it can upend some people's faith for a period of time. And I'm not talking about doing ministry vocationally, but serving other people will force you to reckon with your own weaknesses and the need for God's grace in a new way. And the Bible creates this category of, like, the mature that can do that, some who know how to walk on their own, and others who have fallen by the wayside or need help. And I think it's, we want to help every person along that. We want to be able to help them minister and grow strength. And so processes that can help that, I mean, we kind of backed into ours. Like, ours started at the top with the end in mind and worked our way down. I think a lot of churches start with, like, we've got this first phase. We want to help raise up some disciples. And sometimes they do well at that, and they get lost along the way and never quite make it to the end of, we want to see ready leaders prepared and sent. We backed in. We said, we are definitely going to do that. And so we built a church planting residency that was meant to do in the church training for pastoral leaders who could go plant new churches. And then what we did then is said, well, we need to get more people up to that potential line. So why don't we do this other thing we call a missional leader cohort, that really is to draw people up kind of from that multiplier level to start thinking about expanded possibilities of leadership in the church. Then we built these basics courses, which were designed basically to help members really understand our philosophy of ministry and how they could impact other people in the ministries within the church if they knew how to do basic things like make disciples, share the gospel, build community. And so we kind of, a lot of our strategies for movement were built through that kind of a backing down process. But really, all of the education or training was for then being able to look around and then actually engage in ministry in and through the life of the church. And it's the engagement where people grow. This just informs them how they can take that next step. But you can do lots of training, but training doesn't grow people. It just prepares them to grow if they'll step out and use their training.
Wow. Training doesn't prepare people. Or training doesn't, say that one more time. That's it. It's the experience. Yeah. They have to engage in the actual experience in order for the transformation to take place. Training doesn't transform people. Them getting into the actual experience of it and letting that be the what transforms them. Training just prepares them for them.
I don't even know what I said, but I know what I meant, which is it's not the training itself that transforms people. The transformation in the actual engagement in
the real experience.
So one thing I said, we've kind of talked through the why. We've talked through a little bit of the how. One thing that I said in the first episode is that multiplication, it was our created purpose. That's what God originally created us for, to fill the earth and, multiply and subdue it. But it's also our restored purpose, right? We received this again at the Great Commission after the resurrection of our Savior. And he tells us to go and make disciples. Acts 1:8, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. And the book of Acts just plays that out of what they then went and did. And so a few things I know about Pillar is that, and this not just insider information, this is actually very clear on your about page on your website, that there are some things that you are dedicated to. And I think I'm going to have to reset the Zoom here in just a second. But I'll try to wrap up. Kate, how much time do we have? 7 minutes. Okay, we'll try to wrap up with this real quick. I know that you guys have intentionally stayed mobile as a church. I know that you have always been very careful with staffing. I know that... that there are things that you do give your time to and things you don't give your time to. Obviously, what we've talked about is there's things corporately as the church that that you prioritize, right? That you guys prioritize the residency and you prioritize the training. And so what are some things that... when you think of what you do to multiply, what are some of those things that come to mind? And I guess I don't really know how to ask the question that I deep down want to ask. I can't find the words for it, but help me out the best you can.
And I guess you could argue good training includes both, right? It's teaching, teaching and ideas, and then, you know, guiding into experience, which is what churches ought to be doing.
So let's start with just the choice to stay mobile. Like, I understand, like, the cost of Northern Virginia is just exorbitant. I understand that. Like, we live that with Veritas, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it does come down to a question of how do you, with all the things you can do in ministry, how do you make sure you get to the prioritized things that allow multiplication to happen? And what are some of those things?
So let's start with just the choice to stay mobile. Like, I understand, like, the cost of Northern Virginia is just exorbitant. I understand that. Like, we live that.
The choice to stay mobile isn't a choice to stay mobile. It is a function of priorities.
Right.
And our priority has been to remain freed up to multiply, remain focused on building the church, not the building.
Right.
And buildings are wonderful tools. We intend to do something, but, you know, we're 19 years old as a church and we meet in a middle school auditorium, and we don't really, that hasn't been a hindrance thus far, you know?
And what I would say, for our audience, right? Like, it's the same thing that you understand and already believe about owning a home, right? If the cost of buying a home is more affordable than renting a home, then for sure, buying a home could be the right choice for you. But a lot of times in church situations, buying a home versus renting a home comes with significant more expenses, and now all of church life has to be oriented around managing and maintaining the brick and mortar versus mobilizing those who can go out and change the world. And so that's what I'm kind of trying to peel apart from with Colby.
We focused our time and energy on helping our body be healthy and helping develop leaders that can plant churches. I mean, it's really been everything else has been just a function of those two things. And, you know, on some level, we haven't seen yet that it's been detrimental for us to be mobile like we have. It's actually been helpful in some ways. Now, there are other advantages to if we could get in a building. But again, it's a cost-benefit analysis. I mean, right now, to build the facility we'd like, it's going to be $5.5 million. And so if Connection Church wants to help, you know, fund some of that, we'd love for you to do that. But it's, you know, you're talking about $5.5 million for a church of, you know, 325 people. That also has a bunch of church plants that it helps and supports and wants to see grow. And so we have that expanding family. That's our first priority, that expanding, right, multiplying gospel family. And then, you know, we would love to see a facility that works financially. And we think that there probably are some, there's like a crossroads that we've been working towards to see that happen. But that's why we're in a mobile facility. I think if you came to our church, you know, on a Sunday, if you're listening, you would find a great experience. Hybrid community. You'd have a great experience. You'd learn where you can be a part of small groups. You'd feel like, oh, there's a tight knit community. What it has meant is a little bit less programming, but that's not a bad thing necessarily. It just means that we decide what things are really necessary that we're going to need to gather people together for, and where do we do that. There's been some advantage to it, to be honest. You know, a lot of our men who serve by setting up and tearing down, which we have a simple service. We're not highly produced. We do set up and tear down every week, but it's not a massive thing, but it does build community. It builds genuine opportunities for service among men who are growing in the Lord and just want to pick stuff up and set it down. You know, that's a really, really huge opportunity, honestly. And we know it will have to be replaced.
I think three or four of the eight Connection Church planters that we have all served on set up and tear down. So there's a multiplication built into that for sure. I think the same principle applies really for staffing too, right, for you, right? It's a matter of priority. Like, we can't support other church plants at the capacity that we desire to if we take certain staffing approaches. And it's the same cost-benefit analysis. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times churches make staffing decisions because they think it'll help them break through to the next attendance barrier. You know, if they add that, rather than it's going to make them more effective in their mission.
And I think Trellis and the Vine really breaks that down really well. Great book by Colin Payne, and help me out. Like right now, we as a church, we're having to staff because we're overrun by the Vine, which is the problem that you want to have. And so there's, again, I'm trying to make sure that everybody listening doesn't think that there's like a big church, brick and mortar, bad, small church, mobile, good. But it is about prioritizing a specific principle and leveraging your entire ministry around that thing. You can do it in a big church, you can do it in a small church. You cannot do it in a big church, you cannot do it in a small church. But,
you know,
I think Trellis and the Vine really breaks that down really well. Great book by Colin Payne, and to help me out. And like right now, we as a church, we're having to staff because we're overrun by the Vine, which is the problem that you want to have.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And so there's, again, I'm trying to make sure that everybody listening doesn't think that there's like a big church, brick and mortar, bad, small church, mobile, good. But it is about prioritizing a specific principle and leveraging your entire ministry around that thing. You can do it in a big church. You can do it in a small church. You cannot do it in a big church. You cannot do it in a small church.
And we're in a different place than you guys are. I mean, there are different realities here in Northern Virginia, the closer we get to DC, you know, for making some of that happen. And we've just had to accept that and trust God.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I was talking to Quentin earlier about this. I'm pretty sure and this was painting with a broad brush, but like basically every problem in church life gets solved when people are making disciples or are being discipled. Almost every problem gets solved. Something about that of just like the mindset shift you're talking about of shifting to an idea of making disciples is basic Christianity. That's what we all want to begin to get to, that, you know, most problems get solved when that takes place. So, well, Colby, thank you so much for your time. I've kept you for a long time today. I appreciate your wisdom and your insight. I think our church is going to benefit from your perspective and what you've shared today. I know I was encouraged, and I love any chance I get to chat and catch up with you. So thank you for making time to do this today.